Listen, I am so excited about today's episode of the Nona Jones Show. I get the privilege of interviewing just some amazing human beings, people who have done incredible work through life, ministry, and their career. Today, I get to interview someone I consider to be like a brother to me. So I'm an only child, but this guy is truly like a brother to me, and this is Sam Collier. Who often is in my seat interviewing people, but now you're in the guest seat, which means I get to have some fun with you. So welcome to the show.
Listen, brother is the right term. I really do like we are seriously family. I mean, it's like since the day we met your husband, came to the house, then I started seeing you all over the country. I mean, it's just every time we get together, it's just love and his family. I'm so honored to be on the Nona Jones show. And
Well,
I'm a
listen.
little bit afraid. I'm gonna be honest. I'm a little afraid because when you start going, you can drill.
No, this is gonna be all good, all love. So I love to start. I love to start every episode just inviting my guest to take us back. Right now you have so many different platforms. I mean, from the ministry platform to media platforms across different formats. I mean, you are very influential, very well known in so many different spheres and sectors. But your life has not always lent itself to where you are today. That saying, you don't look like what you've been through, is so true. Would you just take us back? We're going to talk a lot about your book today, which is a phenomenal book. Go ahead and lift it up. Yes, Sam Collier, A Greater Story. Out officially August 4th, so please purchase it. But take us back. Take us back to who was Sam Collier before you were the Sam Collier we know.
Wow. It's interesting because ironically enough, that's what the entire book is about, is walking people back from little Sam over obstacles, under tunnels, to get to where we are today. And I'll say this, I think one of the reasons you and I have connected so much is because we have stories that are just kind of wild stories. I mean, I just want to, a quick plug, go get Nona's book if you haven't gotten it already, about her unique story, because she is truly an overcomer. I know, I'm sorry, it's about me, but I wanted to drop that. But I do think that's been one of the reasons why we've been able to connect. When my mother was 21, she had me and my twin sister, and she had three kids already. So that's five kids, age 21, extreme poverty. We were adopted, and I'll get to that in a second. But when you look through the adoption papers, it says that they traced some of her steps back to a prostitution house. And so we don't know if she was prostituting or if she was just living there to kind of make, ends meet and to have a place to stay. Our father had left the picture. He had some really bad addictions to drugs and substance abuse. Actually, a couple months ago, we lost him from COVID-19. He lost his life up in New York City. Biological father, never met him, spoke to him twice in my life up until that point. And he had diabetes and he was in the hospital in New York City when it was the hotbed. He walked out of the hospital to go and get some drugs, contracted COVID-19, went back to the hospital and passed away. And I only tell you that part of the story. I kind of jump ahead and I'm going to jump back to just kind of let you know where he was at that time, how long substance abuse has had a grip on him. And so he left the picture. Me and my brothers and sisters all have the same mother and same father. And a lot of this I found out in retrospect, which I'll bring you up to. But so our mother's in the hospital, 21. She's got these two twins and these three other kids she can't take care of. She's faced with the decision: do I raise them in poverty, or do I give them up for adoption, send them up the river like Moses in hopes that everything would work out? So she does. She sends us up the river. She gives us kind of puts us in the system. And it's taken me a really long time to say that. It's taken me a really long time. It wasn't until, I mean, actually writing this book, and me speaking to the team and them asking me questions that I even said out of my mouth, I was put in the system. I was abandoned. So on. And I think you know about that. You just go through things and you build a framework around it and you don't even look at it. And so they really helped me go, okay, no, this is like the reality of what happened. No matter how you want to frame it, this is what happened. And so she abandons us, if you will, in hopes that things will work out. We get adopted, so don't get too sad, by a black family, black couple, who had met a year prior to coming down to get us. They met in Washington, D.C., and I think you'll enjoy it. They met in Washington, D.C., in a laundromat on a Sunday afternoon, and they didn't know each other. So my dad's in there washing clothes, going through his second divorce. My mother, who and dad and mom just kind of, I refer to them as dad because they raised us, they're our parents. My mother is getting ready to go through her first divorce. She's in the laundromat. And I usually don't share this part of the story, but she's in the laundromat on a Sunday afternoon because the night before she had been hit in the head with a hammer by her now ex-husband, who actually at the time was a Black Panther. Now, not all Black Panthers are aggressive, but he was. So she got up Sunday morning because she was gonna go kill him because she said, I gotta get out of this situation by any means necessary. So she's walking around the laundromat with a gun in her purse. And go ahead, you had to say something.
No, I'm just amazed. I'm like, okay. Wow.
She's walking around the laundromat with a gun in her purse, and my father meets my dad. They walk out of the laundromat, they end up dating. They both go through with their divorces, obviously. She doesn't go and kill her ex-husband. And they both give their life to Christ for the first time. And at that moment, my father is 50 years old. So he's 84 now, who raised me. I am 32. So he's 50 something. He's really making a decision, kind of, this is the last kind of season or last chapter, if you will, of his life. And so, long story short, they give their life to Christ. They get married. They realize my mother can't have kids. They fly down to Augusta, Georgia, where we had just been given up for adoption by a biological mother 2 months prior. And they walk over to our crib and they say, we want them, me and my twin sister. And the lady who's running the agency, and I'll just be honest, and we're talking about Black Lives Matter. We talk about kind of civil unrest and not endorsing any organization. But kind of the season we're in, the lady who's running the agency was a white woman. So she looks at my parents and she says, you don't want them because where they come from, they're probably not going to be much. Addiction, poverty, prostitution. And she said this, and I usually don't share this part. They probably will be mentally challenged. And so your friend is Priscilla Shire. So you've seen the movie War Room. And my parents form a prayer closet in this adoption agency. And they pray about, God, what would you have us do? And they say that the Lord tells them that we're going to be okay and that we're their kids. So they look back at the lady who's running the adoption agency and they say, no, we want them. And they take us home the week of Christmas, about 3 months later. The news comes out to the house, Christmas miracle. I mean, it was like this wild moment. Fast forward, my sister gets all A's from kindergarten up to 12th grade, becomes an industrial engineer, Spelman grad, Georgia Tech grad, and I'm here with Nona Jones.
Wow. Yeah. Damn, there's so much to unpack there. Yeah. I think one of the first questions I have is, when did you learn, at what point did you learn that you were adopted? And, you know, how did that shape your identity? Because you didn't know all the backstory, right? So you didn't even understand the backstory. When did you learn you were adopted? How did that shape you?
Wow. You know, my parents always told us we were adopted. I mean, since I can remember, it was probably 2 years old, maybe one or two. It was always like, you're adopted. You know, we're young. We're in the Disney. So I'm watching Heroes, and so they're like, we don't think your parents can take care of you, and we're here.
Wow, really?
Yes. So they like made it this like cool Harry Potter rescue, like Disney Lion King thing. A lad, like, you're adopted. You know, it's like, and so we're going to school and we're telling all the kids in preschool we're adopted. We're like, and there are other kids that are adopted, and they're like, me too. And then the kids that aren't adopted start going home and telling their parents, can we be adopted? I mean, it was just
so you basically had a mutiny going on at the preschool. Right.
We had a mutiny because my parents just made it so cool. And so I think, here it is. I think for us and step, because, you know, you hear a lot of adoption stories, and many kids that are adopted, you know, they live out of the abandonment place. I think because of how my mother and father did it and framed it and phrased it and positioned it, we lived out of a chosen place versus an abandoned place. That's why I tell you, it wasn't until I was writing this book that I realized I was abandoned. I didn't even realize, like, it was so much. And again, we weren't rich. I mean, we were the typical black middle-class family. You kind of want the Jordans. You don't have enough money. You can't get the Jordans. You know what I'm saying?
You get the New Balances.
Right. You get the Jordans. And maybe the Reebok Classics.
Maybe, but
you cannot get the Jordans. And so, I mean, we had a ton of acceptance. We weren't rich, but I think because they just poured this narrative over us, and with the work of the Holy Spirit, I should be honest, because, you know, the Holy Spirit can allow for you to process things and can heal you in ways that you don't even know, even as a young. So we lived out of that kind of accepted place.
One question that comes to mind, because you mentioned you didn't discover that you were abandoned until you were writing the book. That's deep. That's deep in many ways, because you were able to live a very full life. So you were able to feel as if you were special, you were chosen. Now suddenly you're having to contend with this new reality. How did that affect you, and how did you reconcile? Those are essentially two different identities. I mean, chosen and abandoned are two different identities. How did you reconcile those?
You know, I'll be very honest with you. And because, you know, we reunited with our family on the Steve Harvey Show, which we can unpack later. Yes. But it was difficult. And when I say difficult, you know, my sister processed a lot of it very, like, I don't want nothing to do with it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's just like, I don't. And I think for me, and I won't unpack too much, but I think for me, I went into a little bit of a shell. Because I really didn't, and I've never been this on, I really didn't know what was going on. I was kind of like.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I have the type of person, and, you know, I don't know if you've been to therapy, but I love therapy, and, you know, I think for me, one of the things that my life coach / therapist / counselor always talks to me about is that she's like, you know, when things get a little wild and right, you kind of pull back and you isolate in order to watch everything so that you can figure out where to go and what to do and how. And so that's what I did. I kind of pulled back from everybody, my sister, my adoptive parents, my bio, everybody. I just went, I'm going to Hawaii. Give me a second. I didn't go to Hawaii, but you know what I'm saying?
Like, I was about to say, what? You didn't tell nobody you were going to Hawaii. Okay.
No, I didn't go to Hawaii.
Sam, so you all know, Sam has a habit of going to very exclusive places and then telling me after the fact, oh my gosh, this place was so amazing. You know, the Gold Coast was so incredible. Oh my gosh. You know, Bora Bora was just incredible. And I'm like, I didn't even know you were going. But anyway.
But what's so crazy even about that is usually when I go someplace, you're usually talking to whoever I'm with in that place. And that's how you find out I'm there. So they're like, yeah. I'm with Nona. I'm like, what? And she's like, tell him.
Yeah. friends don't just travel to South America without telling their friends. That's okay. I'm gonna let you live it down for a minute. But I want to ask this, because something that you said actually it resonates with me. So in my own story, I mean, I was raised by a mother who had mental illness, and in many ways she abandoned me while being in the home by allowing her boyfriend to do things to me, knowing what was happening. And so I felt that abandonment. And I think people don't understand how it affects you. Like, you can be surrounded by people who love you. You can be in a thriving, loving marriage, and that abandonment can make you pull back. It can make you isolate yourself, even when you're surrounded by love. Have you been able to learn how to grow from that? And what has that taught you about yourself?
Yeah, I think it was the first time I truly understood that I go internal and I grab everything when things get a little rocky, when things start moving around in you, and when things start moving around in life, I go, okay, hold on. And I think that was really good for me, because I'm married, so I can kind of educate my wife on, hey, if I do this, I'm with you, but I'm in a space where I'm trying to figure out what's happening. And it actually was a really interesting process with me and my sister, because she went through, it's just been me and her our entire lives. We for 25 years, that was the only blood we knew, just us two. And so when I did this, it was foreign to her, because it was like, because she's like wide open, like, I need you. And I'm kind of like, I'm trying to figure me out too. And I'm trying to be there for you. I mean, it was just, so it kind of broke the whatever rhythm we had a little bit. And then we had to even go through a process where me and her had to sit down with our family, and they go, hey, here's what both of y'all did. And she's like, okay, I get it now. Because in a moment where she's dealing with these abandonment things, she might feel like I abandoned her. And I'm like, "Why? Wait, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with me." So,
right.
so I think I that was one of the biggest things that I learned, is that I do this. And so I think it's being okay with that, and then educating people on that. And then as they know, you can kind of come out of your shell a little bit, or at least give leadership and guidance to those around you, so they know you haven't left them. You're in a space of, I'm gathering myself. I'm hearing from God so that I can move appropriately, because the last thing I want to do is move out of emotion and start doing crazy stuff. Because, I mean, whenever we feel unsafe, that's when we become our worst, right? Just like, so that's what I would say, among other
things. I want to definitely talk about this family reunion that you had on the Steve Harvey show, and what that was like. So take us to the lead up to it and how it even happened. And then what was that even like?
Yeah. So I have to, as a disclaimer, I have to talk about my adoptive dad. Okay. He was a pastor for 4 years. He's from the country, Pike County, chickens, cows, rutabagas is how I describe it. So he grew up on a farm, 1930, and so he's country. He's loud. Not all people from the country are loud, but I think a lot of us know country people that are loud. He's very loud. I mean, that's his normal volume. So we're watching. So after my sister graduates from Georgia Tech and I go on to do the things, around age 24, as adults, we're kind of doing kind of the Christmas thing and coming over the house during the just during the year. And we have a little tradition in our house called NFL football. I think you probably have it Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And we're watching the game. And my dad gave us one rule: nobody talks during the game. So he breaks the rule in country fashion and starts yelling in his mind, talking normal, at me and my sister. And he's like, you need to go find your parents. It's time.
Oh, okay.
And we were like, well, you could grow up one day and marry your cousin and you wouldn't know it.
That's wisdom though. Come on.
That's wisdom. That country wisdom.
Right.
He's like, you don't want to marry your cousin. I was like, no, I don't want to marry my cousin. Well, you need to go find your parents. And I was like, okay. And he says, and the Steve Harvey show, it's going to help you do it. And I said, okay. I said, you lost your mind. I get up, I leave, because I'm like, he's on one again. I find out a little bit later that day. So my dad had a barber shop on Auburn Avenue. I grew up on Auburn. I think we talked about that. We may not, but I grew up on Auburn, birthplace of MLK. And every day in the barber shop, my dad would watch TV while he was cutting hair. So he would watch the Steve Harvey Show every day after Steve took over for Oprah slot kind of. And he said the Lord told him in the barbershop, while he was watching the Steve Harvey Show, that Steve Harvey was going to find our biological family. And so he convinces my sister 2 weeks later after this crazy moment to write into the show. She didn't even really want to do it, but she's like, they're not going to write us back. You know, Ellen's not writing you back, Steve. A year goes by, my phone rings. It's my sister. I said, hello? She says, the Steve Harvey Show just called me. They're going to call you. Bye. And hung up the phone. So then my phone rings again. It's a Chicago number. I answer. It's Dorothy from the Steve Harvey Show, the producer. And she says, this is my first week on the job. There was 100 stories on my desk. Yours was the top story. We think we can help you find your biological family.
Wow.
Do you want to do it? I said, let me call you back. I call my sister. Do you want to do it? She says, no. But I feel like we have to. This doesn't just happen. And you can get famous. I said, well, I can't get famous off one episode. I need to be on multiple times.
Right. Come on now.
And I said, but let's not do it for that. Like, if we don't have to do this. She's like, no, I feel like this is just wild. So long story short, no, they fly us up to Chicago. Me, my sister, my adoptive parents. And when we get to Chicago, Dorothy says, we're so sorry we didn't find anybody, but we want to bring you on the show to make a plea that maybe your biological family would show up. So we go to commercial break after we kind of do the introduction. We're getting ready to make this plea. Steve Harvey comes out of the commercial break and he's like, listen, I know I told you we didn't find anybody, but that's not the case. Your biological mother is here. Eleanor, come on out.
Well.
And on national television, we meet our biological mother. And then he says, and your siblings are here too. And we didn't even know that we had siblings. My parents always said, you might. We've never seen anybody looks like us. So they walk out. My brother and we're identical. My sister. I mean, it was just, that's what happened.
That's a lot. That's a lot on many levels. Man, so you now are connected to people for the first time. How old were you when this happened?
24.
So 24 years.
25.
25 years goes by and you've never seen these people in your life. What was that experience like? And I think the bigger question is, what happened after?
Yeah. And I wrote about a lot of it in here.
Yes.
But I'm going to tell you. But I just want people to know it's in here too. I go deeper in there. Because it's impossible to unpack everything because I got to let you go because you're busy. But I think it was wild. I mean, I think, you know, and I don't, do you have siblings at all?
I'm an only child.
Okay, yeah. You're an only child. So I think this, so that you'll relate to this. It's like, but you knew your mother, but it's like meeting people that's you around your age that look just like you. I mean, it's just for the first, it would be like now, Nona, right now you find out you have a sister.
I don't think I can handle that. I think I would probably just check out of life for a good solid month because I don't know if I can handle that.
She walks in and you're like, me and you look alike. Like, it's just.
Well, and the scary part is I have met so many people who have said, I know somebody who looks exactly like you. And then, you know, in the back of your mind, you're like, huh, okay.
Do I have any?
Yeah.
I mean, we go out to eat that night and somebody makes a joke and everybody laughs and we all had the same laugh. And it was just, it was like I was living in the twilight. Look, I look at my brother who looks like, and he's bald, just like me. He's like 2 years older than me. So I'm like, so when does that happen? He said, when it happened for you? I said, 24. He said, yeah, it happens right around 24. I mean, I had a nonprofit at the time known to call No Losing. He had a nonprofit called No Limits. At the same, I mean, it was just like this weird Twilight Zone kind of stuff. But then the real work happened. I mean, that's when you go from two families to four families, and you know, I gave you kind of the story about my family growing up in poverty and all of that, and you know, my mother biologically, she told me, you know, at any time she had $6,000 worth of crack on her because she was selling to make ends meet for the kids. My brother pulls me to the side and says, hey, I know you may feel like you missed out on something, but you didn't. There were moments we didn't eat for 3 and 4 days at a time. We was just so poor. And my biological mother starts to explain that me and my brother are the only men in our family that aren't dead in prison or in jail. She explains that her dad, my grandfather, died in prison 7 years ago, double life sentence for killing two people. I hear about my dad. So you start to do this, and we could walk down a lot of roads in that moment. But I think the biggest thing that I grasped from learning all of this was why God interrupted our story that way and yanked us out. I just think for me, and I think you can identify, that there needed to be an interruption in our bloodline to flip some things on its head. Because I mean, and it has been me and my brother now, I mean, and obviously my sister, but it's just, you know, a greater story. That's what it's a greater story about, how God can come into your life and do things that you could not do on your own.
Wow. Well, Sam, I want to encourage you, first of all, your life, your spirit, everything about you, just oozes grace. And I'm just so proud of you and how you are allowing God to use you, to use all the parts, the broken parts, the scraps, the pieces that some people would have discarded because they would be like, there's no way God can use this. You're using it for his glory. And so I just pray that God will bless this book. I want to encourage everyone watching this, buy A Greater Story by Sam Collier. This is a story that you need to read. Need to get it in your heart. You need to get it in your spirit, because if you believe that our Creator discards people and discards stories, you will discover that the truth is God doesn't waste anything. So that book, and Sam, I just thank you for spending this time with us during your book release week when you're so crazy and so busy. Brother, you are truly, truly a blessing. So thank you.
Listen, I love you so much. After you read this, read Nona's. You know what? I want to challenge you. Go get both and read them back to back, because I think and we need to talk more, but our two stories together, if you don't believe there's a God, then.
Oh, man. Well, my brother, love you. Thank you all for watching. And again, as soon as you leave this broadcast, head over to wherever books are sold and get A Greater Story by Sam Collier. God bless you all.